All opinions expressed in the Food for Thought podcast series are those of the invited faculty. This content should not be taken as medical advice and is for informational purposes only. Please consult your regional clinical practice guidelines for clinical practice recommendations in your area.
Hello, and welcome to the Food for Thought food allergy podcast from Med Authority. In this series of podcasts, we are joined by world-leading experts discussing the challenges in diagnosis and management of food allergies. Now, over to our experts. So today, we are discussing the topic, overcoming challenges of integrating oral immunotherapy for food allergy into clinical practice. And my name is Alexandra Santos. I'm a professor of pediatric allergy at King's College London and a consultant in pediatric allergy at the Evelina London Children's Hospital. And I have the pleasure to have with me Dr. Sharon Chintroja, director of the Clinical Translational Research Unit of Shen Parker Center for Allergy and Asthma Research at Stanford University, and Dr. Tina Sinder, clinical associate professor of allergy and immunology at the Shen Parker Center of Allergy and Asthma Research at Stanford University. Warm welcome to you both.
Thanks, Alex. Very nice to join you and Tina today.
Thank you, both of you. So excited to be here.
Wonderful. So oral immunotherapy has been a new treatment that has been recently approved by the FDA, and there's more and more interest and pressure to use it in clinical practice. So for listeners that are not so familiar with this, shall we start with the basics? So what is oral immunotherapy?
Thank you so much for that question, Alex. So the way we think of oral immunotherapy is just, you know, increasing small amounts of the food. We updose in clinic every 2 weeks, and the patient continues at home every day, so that to desensitize our immune system over time, so that when you accidentally come across the food, you are not going to have a severe reaction. So essentially, it's training our immune system how to be okay with some amount of the allergen out there in, you know, normal, regular life.
Sharon, what are the forms that immunotherapy can be delivered to allergic patients?
That's a great question. So in addition to oral immunotherapy, you could deliver the offending food allergens via the skin, and we call that epicutaneous immunotherapy. You could do it sublingually as drops, and that's called sublingual immunotherapy. And we don't traditionally introduce foods or desensitize people to foods via subcutaneous immunotherapy. Most people might be familiar with that route for environmental allergens or what we call allergy shots. We don't typically do this for food allergies, though.
So mostly oral via the oral route, and then also sublingual and epicutaneous as additional ways to deliver this treatment. So what are the benefits for oral immunotherapy for people with food allergy?
That's a great question, Alex. This is something I discuss with my patients all the time, either in research clinics or in my outpatient clinic, what does success look like to each person? Some folks want to be able to eat the food, and some folks just want to be protected against accidental ingestions. And what we've found is that oral immunotherapy actually improves quality of life. And some anecdotes I can share from my clinic is recently a patient told me how the food allergic child, her sister was able to bring home, who's not food allergic, candy with peanut in it during Halloween. And that was a big deal for the family to have peanut in the household, because they know that their peanut food allergic child, who is on a daily dose of peanut, is not going to react with that food around them. They also shared with me that this child can now sit with friends at a regular table at school, with allergic children, so she doesn't feel excluded and is part of, you know, her social circle and sitting with friends. Another patient shared with me how they accidentally took a bite of a cookie and could tell right away that there were peanuts in it and did not have a reaction. They didn't continue to eat it, but Just having that knowledge and insight into one's reactions and how they will tolerate this food has a huge impact on not just the patient, but also their entire family.
Right. And there's, as I mentioned earlier, so there's been a treatment for peanut oil immunotherapy that has been approved by FDA and EMEA and the MHRA as well here in the UK for the treatment of peanut allergic children aged 4 to 17 years. But what are the barriers to implement this in clinical practice, Sharon?
It is, we're at this time point where we have this first therapy that's approved, and our patients are coming to us wanting to undergo this therapy. And so some of the barriers is talking about the risks and benefits of oral immunotherapy. Tina nicely highlighted, you know, great success stories. Most people are able to become desensitized to their food, though some people don't tolerate the desensitization process. And, you know, that's part of the conversation. So when I start patients on oral immunotherapy, I talk about that side effects can be common. And the most common side effect are GI side effects and itchy throat. And if you think about doing this every single day, you know, the fear is that maybe they'll be having these side effects all the time and every day when they're dosing. And, you know, and for some, maybe the itchy throat is persistent, but, you know, we try and tell them this is a sign that their immune system is working, which is great. The GI side effects can be very uncomfortable, and that could be stomach ache, nausea, diarrhea. Of course, there's also a risk of having an allergic reaction to your oral immunotherapy dose that looks like an allergic reaction from an accidental ingestion, and it could be severe. That scenario is very rare. So, you know, it is a kind of risk-benefit conversation and shared decision-making with our patients when we talk to them about oral immunotherapy. And then we always tell them, you know, even if you go through this and become desensitized, only very few actually have permanent immune changes. And we don't have great biomarkers to understand which of the few patients who are undergoing OIT have this permanent change in their immune system. And when we talk about that in our field, we're talking about sustained unresponsiveness or tolerance, meaning that when you go through a desensitization period and you stop eating that food, you know, are you still going to clinically react? And so it's important that all of our patients carry epinephrine auto-injectors and reaction medications because it's still possible that they may have allergic reactions.
That's great. That's really important, right? So so we talked about some benefits, but there's also still, you know, a few barriers. So the side effects, the fact that it's not a curative treatment. So why, you know, how are these unmet needs being addressed? Tina, some suggestions?
Yeah, no, that is a great question. There, you know, as more and more societies and guidelines put forth recommendations how to continue OIT, there are, you know, some strategies where OIT can be carried out using store-bought food and kind of, you know, go through the same similar contraindications that we would expect with the peanut product. There are some inter-guideline differences between expert opinion, but that is one way where we can minimize the cost and remove barriers and really kind of make it accessible for patients and use regular food as opposed to a pharmaceutical-based approach to do this.
So what are guidelines recommending precisely with regards to oral immunotherapy? Sharon, maybe a question for you.
Yeah, well, you know, we only have one approved product for peanut allergic patients. Within the age range of 4 to 17 years old. There are other allergists who may use food-based oral immunotherapy in their practice, but that is food. And this is such a tricky area because we are talking about food, which is available in your grocery store or even online, right? So, but when we look at the basic tenets, we know that this should be a supervised process with experts, allergy experts overseeing the care and really having that important conversation with patients about the risks and benefits. And as Tina has alluded to, like our goal, all of us here in the room, is to get this out for to all of our food allergic patients so that they have options to decide at certain points in their life if they want to seek treatment for their food allergies. And, you know, for those patients who may not tolerate the desensitization process because of the side effects, there are many exciting trials looking at combination approaches with different medications, biologics targeting the allergic inflammatory pathway, as single therapies, where patients would just get shots regularly to minimize their reactions to the food, or in combination with oral immunotherapy or allergen-specific therapy. So there's a lot of excitement in the field because there's a lot of clinical trials looking at different therapeutic options. Now that we know that there are, you know, different food allergic phenotypes, really, and trying to meet the needs of all of our food allergic patients.
That's great. That's really helpful. So, so what's the ideal candidate for immunotherapy?
That is a tricky one, I think, Alex, because I mean, this is where shared decision making comes in, and really. I think the ideal candidate would be someone who is, you know, open to communication with their clinical team, go through, you know, verbalize their concerns, really talk through what the different, you know, possibilities are, what the options are. And, you know, and it's okay where you think one way is the way to go. And then what, you know, the immune system has plans of its own. And as you move forward, be open to the idea of maybe, you know, pivoting from the plan in place and just, you know, listening to the body. I know we have so many plans of and schedules and outlines and, you know, deadlines, but honestly, I think being insightful about how, you know, the person undergoing OIT, how they are tolerating it and verbalizing it to their provider, who can then make the appropriate adjustments to the dosing schedule, and understanding it's not an easy road. There are some hiccups, there are some barriers, and we're all in this together, trying to work together, each person's unique struggles as they go through it. So I guess what I'm saying is, in my mind, there's no one ideal person, but really the plan should be adjusted so that, you know, each person's plan is the ideal for them.
Yes, wonderful. That's really insightful. And as Sharon alluded to before, we don't really have good biomarkers to identify, you know, the immune response, the profile immunologically, right, to know exactly who's going to respond well and who is not. We have some ideas, but not precise enough to be able to predict, right, with good enough precision. So I think, you know, the art of medicine is really still the key, right, to use with these treatments. But there are certain groups that are more successful with oral immunotherapy, right, like age groups, for example. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that, Sharon?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of excitement from a recent publication this year called the IMPACT study, where they looked at desensitizing peanut allergic individuals and looked at that permanent immune response or change with sustained unresponsiveness. And though the numbers were small, there's a hint that younger age groups, younger toddlers going through this process, may have a better chance of more durable responses to oral immunotherapy, making that permanent immune switch to forgetting about their peanut allergy. And that's really exciting because that's shifted the focus, you know, 5-10 years ago when we were doing desensitization, oral immunotherapy, people were scared to do it in younger age groups. And this is really encouraging to say that the safety profile looks similar to children and adults, and that there may be some benefit to starting early. And we know that we, with the early introduction guidelines, we are recognizing food allergy early. So this kind of falls hand in hand into our clinical practice, right? Diagnosing food allergy in the less than 1 year age group and perhaps offering therapy in that age group as well.
If I can add one quick thing, I would say that I have had some patients reach out or providers, you know, with a five-year-old being like, are we too late? Like, you know, have we missed the boat on OIT? And I just want to, you know, add that there, that's not, I recommend, you know, definitely pursuing OIT. And we have seen mechanisms and outcomes similar among 7 to 55-year-olds at our center. So we have adults successfully completing OIT trials. So I don't want to discourage anyone from pursuing this if they're beyond the early toddlerhood age group.
That's a great point, Tina. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to conclude our chat today. And I think, I mean, I guess the key messages are that this is a, you know, relatively new treatment, but it's very promising in increasing the threshold of reactivity and improving the quality of life, protecting against accidental exposure. There are still some sort of barriers, so the side effects, particularly the gastrointestinal side effects, and the fact that it's not a curative treatment and involves a lot of shared decision making and a lot of like adjustment and very good communication between the clinical team and the patients. And we need more trials and more research into biomarkers and into patient phenotyping to be able to identify, understand better the immune response, how this treatment works and who will respond best, right? And try maybe to help the ones that don't, that are unlikely to respond so well. Any other last key points from you?
No, that was well said, Alex. Very nice summary and very nice conversation.
Yes, thank you so much, Alex. We had so much fun talking about OIT with you.
Thank you both. It's wonderful to have your clinical and scientific expertise, your experience here shared in this conversation. And I think it will be helpful for everyone listening. So thank you very much. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
MedThority would like to thank the faculty involved for that fascinating insight. If you have any questions regarding this podcast, please feel free to ask us via our website, www.medthority.com. Remember to tune in for the next episode of MedThority Podcasts. From all of us at MedThority, thank you for listening and have a lovely week.